Yeah. Jin-jang-jin-de-an-de-an-de-an-de-an-de-an-de-an-de-an-de-an-de-an-de-an-de-an-de-an-de-an-de-an-de-an-de-an-de-an-de-an-de-an-de-an-de-an-de-an-de-an-de-an-de-an-de-an-de-an-de-an-de-an-de-an-de-an-de-an-de-an-de-an-de-an-de-an-de-an-de-an-de-an-de-an-de-an-de-an-de-an-de-an-de-an-de-an-de-an-de-an-de-an-de-an-de-an-de-an-de-an-de-an-de-an-de-an-de-an-de-an-de-an-de-an-de-an-de-an-de-an-de-an-de-an-de-an-de-an-de-an-de-an-de-an-de-an-de-an-de-an-de-an-de-an-de-an-de-an-de-an-de-an-de-an-de-an-de-an-de-an-de-an-de-an-de-an-de-an-de-an-de-an-de-an-de-an-de-an- Yoga Ananda Jayabhaya Adai Guru Rana Mandya Naga Niyantaya Imi Chedha Doye Jona Lai Janjo Bajo Dhani Gyanjo Pahi Chujo Jive Sona Nala Benje Zanje Dhubarajo Chedha Doye Jona Lai Janjo Bajo Pāgī chūyūn jībē tōnān jīyān tōlā bīnjī sāng jīyān tō pārā yīśū.
Okay, children have, I think, class in the next room. Okay. First of all, I would like to remind all of ourselves to take a moment and cultivate the bodhicitta motivation, that is the altruistic intention seeking complete enlightenment for the benefit of all other sentient beings. Please try to make as best effort as you could to bring about that kind of a motivational change within your mind. And with that kind of motivation, let's participate in this teaching. So let me read a couple of passages to give you oral transmission.
Koi
Geshe-la read a couple of passages starting from the bottom of page 20, where it begins as, before you achieve meditative serenity, you may use discerning wisdom to analyze the meaning of selflessness, but your mind is extremely unsteady, like a lamp in the wind, so your concept of selflessness is unclear, and so on. And he stopped on page 22, the first paragraph, basically. Now he started to give his explanation here. This is where we are talking about how to train our mind in the last two perfections, the perfection of concentration or samadhi and the perfection of wisdom. And we have six what we call key points or outlines here. The first one has to do with the benefits of cultivating shamatha or calm abiding, which is translated as serenity here, and cultivating wisdom. The second key point is how shamatha or calm abiding really constitute the basis for all other forms of samadhi or concentration. And the third point is we have tried to define what is calm abiding or serenity and what is wisdom. We have tried to differentiate between these two states of mind, if you will. And the fourth point is why do we need to cultivate both of this? Why do we need to cultivate both calm abiding, serenity, and discerning wisdom or the wisdom? And this is where, we are going to talk about today. And then the next we will talk about, in what particular sequence or order should we cultivate calm abiding and wisdom? So we're going to talk about, as it reads on page I guess I need four arms today to do this flipping and holding and everything. But on page 19, it says why it is necessary to cultivate both. Okay, so that's the outline of the key point we're going to talk about. So I would like to, you know, emphasize this point that it's really important to, if you will, memorize or remember these key outlines or the key points, and especially if you want to engage in meditation on these themes or the topics, so then it's really very important for us to have the key ideas or the outlines. We may not be able to remember, right, every sub-point under the key point, but it's good to have those broad ideas or the key points, you know, that will facilitate our meditational practice. So why must we cultivate both calm abiding serenity and special insight or wisdom? The primary reason is that for us to be able to uproot delusions or afflictive emotions from within our mind, we need both these states of mind. And as we have talked about this before, that calm abiding or shamatha is the state of mind where we are able to, you know, focus on a particular subject or object of meditation so that our mind does not waver to any other object or other things, but we are able to place or set our mind on a particular subject or object. So that kind of ability comes through cultivating calm abiding or shamatha. Okay. And so with that kind of a power of mind, you know, we're able to, how should I say, do our practice really well. And the metaphor that's given is, you know, if you want to cook, right, something, and if you're cooking outside where there is a lot of gusty winds blowing, we start the fire, so fire is being disturbed, the flame, everything, and maybe we didn't put even our pot properly on the stove, right? So how long it will take for us to cook our food, right? It'll take a lot of time. But on the other hand, if the fire is in a very protected area, and we really, the fire is only, how should I say, heating the pot right on top of that, it's not being, you know, disturbed by anything else, then the cooking will go really well. That's the same way. If our mind is very stable, if we have the stability of the mind, then we can really do focused practice and meditation. If our mind is, you know, any more, well, he didn't say that, but you know what I mean, right? And so our practice is going to be many more, okay? And so that's why calm abiding is a must, you know, for us to be able to really bring that force to our, you know, practice, you know, to empower our practice, if you will. Now, we need the special insight into selflessness, because that is the very antidote that really uproots our delusions from within our mind. If we cultivate special insight into selflessness, all other kinds of distorted views of the conceptions, you know, cannot arise. You know, they will be, how should I say, prevented from arising. And so that's why, now as you can see, that we need to cultivate both stability of the mind, which comes from calm abiding or serenity, and special insight, which comes from what we call vipassana, or in Tibetan called Lakdong.
In order to
in order to understand selflessness, it is not necessary for us to cultivate serenity or calm abiding. Yeah. We can understand selflessness through what is called inferential valid cognition. I know I'm throwing you a technical term here. In other words, based upon valid reasoning, right, based upon valid inference, we will be able to have, you know, correct conceptual understanding of what selflessness is. We don't need to come abiding to be able to understand what selflessness is. But that conceptual understanding, you know, what that tells us is that we are seeing selflessness through what we call some veil, the generic image of what selflessness is. Yeah? And that kind of understanding is not enough for us to be able to uproot delusions from within our mind. We need to be able to realize selflessness directly or non-conceptually. Yeah? So that's why you know, we engage in meditational practice, you know, in order to be able to, as if we are peeling off the conceptual layers so that our conceptual understanding of selflessness becomes direct, non-conceptual realization of what, you know, selflessness is. For that kind of direct realization, we must have stability of the mind or calm abiding or shamatha. Yeah. And as you know, you can read in the relevant passage between page 20 and 21, where it says that if we, you know, analyze selflessness without calm abiding, we may be able to get a sense of what it is, but it is like the butter lamp which is left outside in the windy place. It's still very wavering, and it's not a powerful state of mind to be able to experience selflessness directly. Yeah. On the other hand, if we have the stability of the mind or calm abiding, and being in that state of mind, if we analyze selflessness, the more we analyze, there is not going to be any disturbance. You see, the more we're able to deeply penetrate what selflessness is. See, that's what, you know, brings, what the calm abiding brings into our analysis. Okay? So it is like if we lit a butter lamp in a very protected area, that lamp can shine very brightly, right? Nothing is disturbing its flame or the clarity. It can illuminate whatever it can illuminate. So just like that, with calm abiding or shamatha, we are able to, bring the clarity, to our realization of what, selflessness is. And so therefore, it's very important for us to cultivate, stability of the mind. And, initially we realize selflessness conceptually through inferential valid cognition. We call it chabatsema, right? Based upon valid reasoning, we realize what selflessness is. Then through meditational practice, especially on the path of meditation, we try to sort of peel off the layers of conceptuality, right? And with the help of the stability of the mind, now we are deeply able to penetrate into selflessness, right, without being disturbed. And then finally, we are able to transform that conceptual understanding of selflessness into direct realization of selflessness. Yeah. So that is the really powerful antidote to uproot our delusions. And so the point to be clarified here is, so when we have a direct realization of emptiness, we see emptiness as clearly as anybody could see it. Okay? Being able to realize the emptiness is the power of special insight. But being able to see the emptiness clearly, comes from stability of the mind. Okay? Right? Just like when we look at our example, the butter lamp. Right, what really illuminates is the light that comes through the butter lamp. But when it is protected from the winds, then it can really shine more clearly, right? But that kind of comes from protection. Yes. As it states on page 21, thus, if you engage in analysis with a wisdom possessed of the meditative equipoise of serenity, a state undisturbed by laxity or excitement, then you will understand the meaning of reality. With this in mind, the compendium of the teaching sutras states, when your mind is in meditative equipoise, you will understand reality as it is. Now, the explanation given on this is when we cultivate calm abiding or shamatha, when we have it, that means when we could be in a state of mind which is free of laxity and excitement. Okay, so nothing is able to disturb our mind. And being in that state of mind, when we invoke, if you will, special insight or vipassana, now we can see the selflessness as clearly as anybody could see it. Yeah. And so here the understanding of selflessness is not just a simple understanding, not that just kind of general kind of understanding that we can talk about. This is really more like, realizing, right, as deeply as possible what selflessness is. So that's why it's through the combination of calm abiding and special insight we could have that kind of, clear realization of what selflessness is. Yeah. Yes.
You the Shamba Ninja, Shamjin Simjola, so the Shedding
Now we're basically making the same point, but quoting a different scriptural authority. As you can see on page 21, we have a quote from Acharya Kamal Shila's first stages of meditation or Bhavana Krama, and where it reads, "Because your mind moves like a river, it does not rest without the foundation of meditative serenity. A mind that is not in meditative equipoise cannot understand reality just as it is. Also, the Bhagavan says, with meditative equipoise, you know reality just as it is." So the Geshe-la has been giving explanation on this. He said that, we need to cultivate calm abiding or serenity as a foundation for cultivating special insight of vipassana. And think about, building a house. We have to start with the foundation, right? If the foundation is not there, how can we build a house? If the foundation is kind of not weak, then the house will crumble down. So we have to build a very firm foundation, and in the same way, we need to cultivate a serenity or calm abiding to lay the firm foundation for cultivating special insight or vipassana. And we could only do that if our mind is in the state of meditative equipoise, okay? Now, right now, our mind is more like a running water, okay? The water that runs is not sitting anywhere. It just kind of, keeps moving. If our mind is running like that, then we really cannot really develop deep insight into selflessness. So we have to somehow, if we will, control our mind. Okay. And stability or the calm abiding helps us to do that. And being in a state of meditative equipoise, technically speaking, this state of mind really belongs more to the higher realm of existence. Technically speaking, the mind in the desire realm of existence is not in a state of meditative equipoise. The mind that is in the meditative state of equipoise really belongs to the higher states, right? We say form of the formless states of in existence. And so once we have calm abiding or shamatha, then being in that state, we can analyze as much as we want what selflessness is. it's going to be much more powerful analysis. It's not going to be disturbed by anything else. And that's how, you know, we are able to bring, if you will, the power to the practice, as you say. Well, of course, it's not only selflessness. As is mentioned here, you know, we could be focusing on impermanence. We could be focused on karma and its effects. We could be contemplating the disadvantages or the faults of samsara or cyclic existence. We could be cultivating love, compassion, or the practice of bodhicitta. We can't focus on any practice. Our practice becomes very powerful and effective practice only if we have the stability of the mind. You know, when we lack the stability of the mind, we could do practice. Our virtuous practice become very feeble, you know, very weak practice, you know. So that's why we must cultivate, you know, first stability of the mind or calm abiding. As a matter of fact, we need both calm abiding and special insight, vipassana, to be able to, you know, realize selflessness just as it is.
Yes. Well, that is usually ສິ່ງທີ່ເຊື່ອວ່າຍິມຸເຊື່ອຖ້າແລະນີ້ເດດດຽວຈະກະດຸສຸຍິນທີ່ຊິເຈຍສິ່ງທີ່ເຊື່ອວ່າດີຣິເພທໍມິສົງສິດິສຕິວະດາທີ່ຈໍເນດໍລະວ່າດາກະຊິເດມາໂຣນາດາຊິກຸຍິດຍໍດີກໍແດສິ່ງທີ່ຍິມຫຍໍບໍ່ຖ້າຊໍແດວ່າຊິດາສິ່ງທີ່ຍິມຫຍໍຊິດກະຊິທີ່ປິເກດຽວຈະບໍ່ຊິກາຊິນດີປິເກດໂຕທໍມາລະສິບໍ່ດາກະຍິມຸເຊື່ອຖ້າແລະນີ້ສິນະເປັນຕາດຽວຈະແຄນາລະຍ
At the bottom of, on the bottom page 21, we have a quote from Bodhisattva Char Avatar, or a guide to Bodhisattva's way of life, again to emphasize the same point. And I quote, "The person whose mind is distracted lives between the fangs of affliction, and the one who knows reality has said that prayers, austerities, and such, even if practiced for a long time, are pointless if done with a distracted mind." Yeah. So now the explanation given on this is that if our mind is not in the state of serenity, if we will, then even if we try to practice, our mind is really distracted by laxity and excitement. Even though we think we are practicing, but really our mind is more kind of influenced by laxity and excitement. So therefore, our practice is not going to be, really powerful in the first place. Or in many ways, we are so distracted that we are really not practicing at all, right? That's the situation we find ourselves in. And so when our life is very distracted like that, so it is as if, metaphorically speaking, we are caught in between the fangs of the delusions, the afflictive emotions. Okay, I mean, imagine that if we got caught in the fangs of a tiger or something, that would be such a painful situation. In the same sense that when we are caught in the fangs of the delusions, it's not a comfortable state of existence, really. Okay, and as the one who knows reality, that's an epithet for Buddha. So the Buddha said that if our mind is distracted, we could be doing recitations, which means reciting mantras usually. We could be engaging in austerities such as nyumne practice, fasting retreat, right? We try to put our body to some kind of a little bit of a difficulty situations, right? We could do all those practices, but if our mind is distracted, it would be more like meaningless practice. We are not going to achieve much, out of such distracted state of mind. And as Geshe-la quotes from his memory, elsewhere in the sutta, Buddha addressed the monks. He said, "O Sangha community, if you have what we call the mind of the desire realm, then even if you engage in prayers and do other practices, it's going to be fruitless." So this is what we're talking about. If our mind is distracted by laxity, excitement, a whole lot of other things, even if we try to pursue practice, our practice is going to be, weak practice. Yes. So basically, Geshe-la reread the first paragraph on page 22, and I'm not going to bother reading it to you because many of you have the text, but I pay more attention to his commentary on this. And so the point here is, simply put, if our mind is distracted, even if we do practice, our practice is going to be not so powerful. If our mind is very focused, has serenity, then any practice we do, it becomes a very powerful and effective practice. And so the whole point of cultivating serenity or shamatha is that, we are able to set our mind on anything we choose to set it on. Okay? And so that's why we are cultivating, shamatha. And so in the beginning, of course, we have to choose a particular focus or a subject. So we cultivate stability of the mind with regard to that. We don't let our mind distracted by any other focus of the object. But once we have the stability of the mind or shamatha, then it would be a mistake just simply to stay focused on that object and nothing else, as if nothing else exists in the world. Okay, once we have the shamatha, now we should expand the scope of our shamatha and we can direct it to anything we like. This is why when we talk about shamatha, we talk about serviceability of the mind. Our mind becomes so serviceable, we can basically tell it to do anything we want. We say, you know what, sit there. Okay, don't sit there, come back, sit there. Okay, we can just kind of direct it to any object or the focus that it will, you know, stay focused on that object. So that's the beauty and the strength of shamatha. And so the point is that when we cultivate shamatha, you know, we bring mind under our control. Okay, as we could say, we are the master of our domain here. Okay, so we can say, okay, I'm in charge and I want you to sit and focus on that, else do that. I say, you know what, come back. I don't want you to get stuck there. I want you to focus on this. So as a matter of fact, once we have shamatha, we should be able to focus on many other kinds of things, you see. Otherwise, if you stay only focused, narrow down on one thing, that would be a mistake. Yeah, so we need to expand the scope of shamatha. And with that, as we talked about earlier, that we can engage in any practice, right? The whole list is given there. We can engage in generosity. We can cultivate faith. I mean, faith in this particular context means cultivating actually altruistic mind of enlightenment. And so we can engage in any practice, and our practice will really become truly effective and powerful practice. Notes. We're still on page 20. Now we have talked quite a bit about why must we cultivate shamatha or serenity or calm abiding. Okay. And we have been making a case here that we must cultivate both serenity and special insight. So let's talk about why must we cultivate special insight or vipassana. Okay. Vipassana in this particular context, it specifically refers to special insight into selflessness, okay, the ultimate reality or the nature of a phenomena. Now, we could spend all our life cultivating serenity or shamatha, and let's assume we become very successful in doing that, then we use shamatha to simply focus on selflessness. Well, that's not going to be inadequate for our spiritual progress. Okay? Why? Because shamatha does not have the power to uproot delusions. Okay? Shamatha gives us the ability to stay focused on something, you know, and whatever we focus on, it becomes very powerful, but it does not have the power to counteract our delusions. So this is where we must cultivate special insight or vipassana pertaining to selflessness. And in this particular case, you know, what we should really be aware of is, you know, sometimes we do talk about shamatha or serenity and certain kind of insight or wisdom, okay? Combination of those two. But such combination does exist in other non-Buddhist practices, such as, if in my footnote, in Hindu practices, okay, where they talk about cultivating shamatha and cultivating some kind of a wisdom or insight, which helps them to see that the mind, well, now this is my, just to give you a better understanding what we're talking about, it's such a technical term we throw that you might not get sense of what it is. So this is like translator's footnote somewhere. Where, you know, what we're seeing is that, you know, the minds that belong to the higher states of existence are considered as more deeper and sharper, whereas the mind that belongs to the desire realm is more coarse and gross. Okay, so then we think that by cultivating certain special insight that belongs to higher level and combining that with calm abiding, we might be able to achieve something. Okay, but even that kind of insight cannot counteract. It's not the antidote to delusions. Okay, that's what we have to remember. So the kind of special insight or vipassana we are talking about that directly counteracts our delusions is the wisdom realizing selflessness. Okay, so we have to cultivate this kind of special insight, realizing selflessness, in order to uproot delusions from within our mind. Okay, after all, what are our goals? Well, broadly stated, we have two really high spiritual goals. One, we want to be liberated from samsara. We want to achieve nirvana. Well, in order to achieve nirvana, we have to eliminate delusions from within our mind. And how can we do that? We must have the wisdom realizing selflessness, isn't it? Okay. Now, we want to achieve Buddhahood and enlightenment. Again, nobody becomes a Buddha with delusions intact. So we have to remove delusions again here. So we need, again, the wisdom realizing selflessness to uproot the delusions. So this is why calm abiding, however powerful, beautiful, you know, it is, but, you know, it is not cut, as we would say, to do, you know, to do the job, means to get rid of the delusion. It simply helps us to focus on things, whatever we want to choose. Okay? We must cultivate a special insight of selflessness in order to uproot delusion. So that's another reason why we must cultivate both of them, as a matter of fact. Okay? Nonsuke.
Gombashin,
So Geshe-la read the quotes at the bottom of page 22. We have the sutra unraveling intended meaning and also King of Concentration Sutras, Samadhi Raja Sutra. The first thing what Geshe-la said is, you know, the way Jerem Buche or Lama Tsongkhapa really addressed the issues. Yeah. Okay, I need something to kind of tie it up here. Okay, Geshe-la read, you know, the quotes from, what is it? Okay, now the page flipped again or something. No, Unraveling Thought Sutra and Samadhi Raja Sutra. And so he wants us to really understand that how Jerem Buche or Lama Tsongkhapa, sitting next to me here, how he really addresses different issues. You know, he would quote the authentic shastras or the treatises, such as Stages of the Meditation by Kamal Shil, such as Bodhisattva Avachar by Acharya, you know, Shantideva, and so on. But then he doesn't leave it there. Then he quotes the sutras, right? After all, we have to trace back to what did Buddha say, right? That is the ultimate authority on things. So he quotes the authentic shastras as well as sutras. That's why, you know, we hear different sources being said, but trying to make the same point. It seems like redundant. So what are we doing, really? You know, that's the Jerem Buche's approach to address these, different, you know, issues. And in the King of Concentration Sutras, there is mention of a name called As They Did Udraka, who cultivated concentration in this way. Okay? So Geshe-la was kind of trying to tell the stories relating to that. Okay? So before that, the point here is, if we cultivate calm abiding or serenity and maybe combine it with some kind of worldly insight wisdom, we may temporarily be able to suppress our afflictions. And as if temporarily, you know, we seem fine. Everything's cool, is it? But then, you know, at certain later point of time, the delusions could come back and arise. And then we are like, what happened now? Okay, I thought I'm free of delusions. Now they came back. Yeah. It's because we have not cultivated, you know, the special insight into selflessness. Okay, so that's the point. And so this is something, you know, stability of the mind is something we can lose as well. So there's a story of Udraka here. I think Udraka was one of those 18 Sangha members that Buddha met, you know, at one point. And Udraka was known for being, you know, in having achieved the stability of the mind, you know, he can get absorbed in the state of mind and just kind of locked in and stay there. Okay, so he was very much known for that. So there are different versions of the story how he kind of lost his concentration later on. The one version of the story is that he stayed absorbed in the concentration for so long, and once he kind of awoke from that concentration state, he realized that his hair were nibbled by the rats, the rodents, you know, messed up. So he got really angry. And the anger popped up, and he lost, you know. And then, of course, he was reborn in unfortunate states of rebirth, and he lost his stability of the mind. So that's one part of the story. Okay. Another version of the story is that, you know, once, you know, certain king of the, that must be in India, right, invited him because he was renowned for his samadhi and everything. He said, okay, I would like to treat you and invite you to the palace for the lunch kind of thing. He said, okay, I'll sure be there. So he uses miraculous power because with certain, you know, shamatha, you can have that. So he just basically flew to a king's palace, right, where he was treated really well. And for some reason, he developed an attachment to one of the queens. You know, he thought, that's pretty woman, you know, something. He didn't say that. And as a result of that delusion, again, later on, he was reborn in bad migraines. He lost, again, his stability of the mind. Okay. So the point here is, you know, it is, you know, important to cultivate the stability of the mind, right? So then we can, you know, being in that mind, we can analyze selflessness and cultivate special insight, and then we can move on and, you know, go to nirvana or enlightenment, wherever we want to go, right? Otherwise, if we get attached too much importance to the stability of the mind, serenity, as if that's all and nothing but enough, right? We could be disappointed, just like the Udraka, okay?
用是没准，主要是靠的用是没准。土地，嗯，不，可是，农业的风光，连用是没准的，得了工地地基些呗，地基些，先地基些，先的技术全部在把你干些的做，就说些干些东西，这些东西，但得了个些东西吧，到那，那个啥，这个是另外那个乡里县，那个县里也配套要嘛，是搞。
그게
Pick up the phone. Mic here, sorry. 23 page, where we have a quote from Bodhisattva Pitika, or scriptural collection of the Bodhisattvas. And Geshe-la read that passage, and now he explained what's the point of that passage. Is that if we want to be free from, right, the suffering such as the cycle of birth and death and aging and sickness, then we must cultivate wisdom realizing selflessness, without which we will never be free of all those pains and sufferings. So there are, I think, a lot of stories which do, like, sometimes practitioners, you know, they assume that as they achieve certain higher states of mind, okay, we can talk about the form realm of existence and formless realm of existence, they are higher, levels of mind. So they, you know, mistakenly consider one of those higher levels of states of mind as if it is a state of nirvana, okay. Once you achieve that, while you have it, it's very peaceful. It looks like you are liberated, yeah? And the problem is, once that state of concentration diminishes the power, then you could possibly, you know, be reborn in the bad migrations due to your bad karmas, okay? Then you're so disappointed, and you might even develop the wrong views or the distorted views. Now you think, you know what? Give me a break, you know. There is no such thing as nirvana. What is this nirvana, yamana, what about all this, you know? It doesn't really exist. Because you assumed that you achieved it, and then you thought, okay, what happened to me now? Yeah. So that's the problem. Yeah, so we've got to be, be careful with it. So if you don't want to be caught in such kind of a wrong conceptions and, you know, wrong understandings of things, then it's very important for us to, you know, understand what selflessness is and also cultivate the wisdom realizing selflessness so that we can be really free from samsara and we don't have to fall back and then ask ourselves, what happened to me now? Okay? No. On page 23, we have a quote from Ratnakuta Grantha, or the collection of jewels, sutra. And I quote, "Keeping ethical discipline, you will attain concentration. Attaining concentration, you cultivate wisdom. With wisdom, you attain pure, sublime wisdom. And as your sublime wisdom is pure, your ethical discipline is perfect." Now, what this really means is that in order to cultivate stability of the mind or shamatha, you know, we have to abide by pure ethics or morality. Okay, ethical discipline is a foundation for all kinds of practices. Okay, so being, you know, abiding in ethics, when we cultivate concentration, here concentration refers to shamatha or serenity, and once we have it, then being in shamatha, we cultivate the wisdom. The kind of wisdom we talk about here is particular kind of wisdom that realizes selflessness as it is. So once we have that, now we have the union of calm abiding and special insight, right? The combination of the two. With that kind of a, you know, state of mind, now any other practices we do, it becomes very powerful practice. And so even our ethical practice becomes very pure practice. Okay, all other practices we do become very proper and, you know, powerful practice. Now, if, you know, we cultivate aversion to samsara or cyclical existence, which is called renunciation, yeah, and then use this union of calm abiding and special insight, we could attain nirvana or freedom from samsara or cyclical existence. But if we cultivate bodhicitta motivation, right, that's the altruistic motivation, and combine that with the union of calm abiding and special insight, then we can really become a Buddha, right? So once we have that union of calm abiding and special insight, depending on our motivation, we could either, you know, be free from samsara, and or we could be in the enlightened state. No, excuse me. Sutra of Cultivating Faith in the Mahayana says, "O child of good lineage, if you did not have wisdom, I would not say that you had faith in the Mahayana of Bodhisattvas, nor would I say you knew the real nature in the Mahayana. Now, the explanation given on this is, in the case of Bodhisattvas, if they do not cultivate the wisdom realizing selflessness, even though they have bodhicitta, right, spirit of enlightenment, they will never be able to realize their ultimate goal, because their ultimate goal is to become a Buddha. Okay? Yes, for bodhisattvas, the core practice is bodhicitta, but without the wisdom realizing selflessness, your delusions remain intact. Right, you cannot free yourself of delusions. So with delusions, you cannot be Buddha either. Right? So bodhicitta is a wonderful attitude, but it alone is not enough to, you know, reach complete enlightened state. So therefore, you know, here the Buddha is telling that if you do not have the wisdom, then I wouldn't say that you really on the path of Mahayana and, you know, directed towards enlightenment. Yes. Okay, now we are going to move to the next key point, how to be certain about their order. In other words, you know, of these two, calm abiding and special insights, which one should we cultivate first? What is the sequence order in which we, you know, cultivate these two things? As we have a quote from Shantideva's Bodhisattva's way of life, insight possessed of serenity destroys the afflictions. Knowing this, seek serenity at the outset. So in other words, that we have to first cultivate calm abiding or shamatha, okay, and then cultivate vipassana or special insight into selflessness. Okay, that is the proper sequence of order. Without shamatha, even if we try to analyze what selflessness is, our analysis is not going to be fruitful and not going to be deep analysis and, you know, proper analysis. No. At the bottom of page 23, over to page 24, So what we just said, based upon, for example, Shantideva's Guide to Bodhisattva Way of Life is, you know, we must first cultivate serenity or calm abiding, and then cultivate spiritual insight into selflessness. That's the proper order of practice. And now a doubt has been raised here. Okay, so maybe somebody's trying to be a devil's advocate, I suppose, here. So the question is that, well, if we look up into Kamal Shila's stages of meditation, you know, what he said is that, I quote, its meaning, calm abiding, object of meditation is indeterminate. In other words, you can choose any focus for cultivating calm abiding. It doesn't have to be this or that. It can be anything, it says, right? So if that is true, that said, then why must we cultivate serenity first? Because one can first try to understand what selflessness is. Okay? So based upon that understanding, then one can cultivate calm abiding. And whenever you have calm abiding, by that time, so these questions are things that you would also have special insight into selflessness. You know? So why must we cultivate the serenity first? Did you get the question? Okay. So the questioner said, you know, why must we cultivate serenity first and then cultivate spiritual insight? Because wouldn't it be possible for one to understand selflessness first and then focus on that and cultivate serenity? And when you have serenity, then he assumed that you would have both what's called serenity and spiritual insight. Yeah. And here the Jai Rinpoche answers his qualm or the, you know, question. He said, well, you really didn't understand the whole point here. And he's, I'm not saying that in order to understand emptiness, one must cultivate serenity first. Okay? It is possible to understand emptiness, you know, without cultivating calm abiding or serenity. Okay? That's not the point. Okay? And I'm not saying that you must have serenity in order to have all other kinds of realizations like love, compassion, bodhicitta. That would be too much. That would be absurd. What I'm saying here is that in order to have the special insight of selflessness, which is characterized by ecstasy or the bliss of pliancy of body and mind, you must first have serenity or calm abiding. Okay? So once we achieve calm abiding or serenity, we experience certain bliss that arises from the pliancy of body and mind, physical and mental pliancies. Okay? So being in calm abiding state of mind, now when we analyze selflessness as much as we can, such an analysis gives rise to the bliss of the physical and mental pliancy through analytical meditation. Okay? So that kind of experience has to come, right, from calm abiding. Okay? So without calm abiding, one cannot experience bliss of analytical meditation, pliancy and body and mind with regard to selflessness. So that's my point. I'm not saying that you cannot understand emptiness, right, without calm abiding. One could, possibly. But I'm saying that to be able to have that special insight characterized by the bliss of physical and mental pliancy, you have to do this tremendous deep analysis. You could only do that if you have the calm abiding state of mind. Okay, so that's my point. Okay. So I think there are some related questions. So that's a lot of questions and qualms being raised, or the devil's advocates are rearing their heads, I suppose. So we cannot finish it off today. So we will stop there today, and Gisela would like to welcome your questions. So I'm handing this tool to you now.
So is there no emphasis then on cultivating shamatha in order to attain, to deepen bodhicitta? Because it sounds like, at least from what my understanding has been, is that, in special insight and bodhicitta are both important in order to attain enlightenment. So that's my question.
Sure. So Kishal wants to clarify that generally speaking, in order to understand emptiness, in order to cultivate bodhicitta, there is no need to cultivate serenity or calm abiding first. Okay, so without calm abiding, we could understand emptiness or even realize emptiness. We could cultivate bodhicitta, experience it. The point that's being made, throughout here is, now if we are to experience the ecstasy or the bliss that arises from analysis, okay, and based upon physical and mental pliancies, for that kind of experience, we must first cultivate serenity or calm abiding first. Because calm abiding, when you really have it, your body and mind become very serviceable. Yeah, because of this pliancy of body and mind, you also experience certain bliss or a joy. Yeah. Now, being in that state of mind, you know, where your mind is still not disturbed, now when we do deep analysis, then that kind of analytical meditation, right, with regard to selflessness gives rise to the bliss or the joy that arises from, again, physical and mental pliancy. So that kind of thing, the order that we're talking about is a must. First, we must cultivate serenity and then cultivate that kind of special insight. Otherwise, generally speaking, in order to realize another's emptiness, we do not have to cultivate calm abiding first. In order to have bodhicitta, we do not have to cultivate serenity first. Okay? Anybody else? Yeah.
I heard you say that it's important to have calm abiding, and in relationship to Nungye coming up, what does one do to participate in Nungye when one doesn't have calm abiding?
Yes, I mean, we may not have calm abiding or samatha now, but we could still do fasting retreat or yunne. Now the question is, you know, would our fasting retreat become really powerful practice or not? Now that would be a real question. Okay, without calm abiding, we can still do yunne practice. We can do that retreat. Yes.
Thank you. So, with respect to calm abiding, is there a pinnacle point that we're reaching for, or are there levels where we understand that, yes, now I have more calm abiding than I did a month ago, a year ago, 2 years ago, and if not, then how do we know when we're there?
Any haku grab sinet cause you tobacco chicet muscle levage rogan. Did they marry in any chick than the shine drugu makanda haku resrova? Better so Sunday call the Kazangema teacher and yes in the test hard sin or again. That's ya did the chick or rimbarish tie or they may not any shine top of the Kansaku res or get top in that same name with the woman. In order to cultivate calm abiding or shamatha, we do talk about stages of mental development as a 9 of them. So as we move from one to the next, you know, we will be able to just recognize, you know, what stage, you know, we have reached. But the real calm abiding shamatha we talk about, it is really characterized by the bliss of physical and mental pliancy. Okay? Now, that exotic word, what it sounds is, when we really reach the calm abiding, that, you know, our, you know, the energy in our body flows so swiftly and so smoothly, that gives rise to a certain special bliss or the joy. And that certain bliss or the joy, mental joy, also facilitate the flow of the energy. And because of that physical and mental pliancies, right, I mean, we can sit in meditation day in and day out, right? Nobody's going to complain about the back aching and the knee pain and, you know, all those, you know, in the complaints we usually have. Because our body becomes very serviceable. Our mind experiences so much joy. And so when we reach the real calm abiding state, this is the experiences we will have, and then we know we have it. Okay. Yes.
Is part of this bliss also that when you do that, you learn things or you understand things? I would imagine that would be a part of it, but it doesn't seem like it is the part of this bliss. And the second is, did Buddha write someplace his definition of what selflessness is?
Did Buddha write it someplace?
Yeah, so, okay.
Tiwa Tangbodi, Tan the Lucim Shinjang Tawasa Jarogan, Tawa de Kuran Yongzo, Samsare in a Yongzo de Gitik Kurtok Rogan, Totuger, Shed Shagrogan, Never Jerry Yomaris Rogan, you have a source me do stand that do several again. Niva di, and a Sanjegi, and a Casa than the Tamese Jarogan, Tame did the rest to tea showers, Kawachi tea or was that tea Casa, that's something gives good your wagon. Oh, the Tamese Rogan. Sanjay again, din Thomas and dinner rest, and about the chick, Tisha was your sister, Rogan. The better was your Rogan. Tangwood again, the Lism Shinjang Tawa, the Kotawan Yongzo, some Yanako Chishag, New Watcher Rogan. Once in a Kazata, you talk with Chelet, your sister Rogan.
No,
okay, question number one, this is about what you said, whether that bliss that arises out of physical mental pliancy, you know, is able to cognize or perceive anything. The Geshe-la's explanation is that, you know, when we reach that state where we have come abiding, our body and mind become very serviceable, that we can sit in our practice for as long as we want to. And because of that blissful experience, the blissful experience itself may not have a cognitive ability, but it does facilitate, it augments all other practices that you do. That if you are cultivating like inside of wisdom, it really helps to sharpen your wisdom, you know, and it really augments and facilitates all other practices that you would do. Now, with regard to your second question, you know, did Buddha write about what selflessness is? The whole collection of Panjana Paramita Sutras or the Perfection of Wisdom Sutras is really all about selflessness or emptiness. You know, we use both terms interchangeably, you know, sometimes. Okay, and but that being said, you know, sometimes we may not necessarily find that the explanation Buddha gave as very, how should I say, easy to understand. And of course, many great masters have written about that. But Jerembuche Lama Tsongkhapa, perhaps he is the one master who has really been able to define and explain selflessness or emptiness as clearly as anybody could possibly explain it. Okay, so that's why we often rely upon Jerembuche's commentaries, elucidation to understand what selflessness or emptiness is that Buddha has talked about in the Perfection of Wisdom Sutras. I think we better stop there today, right? I don't want to get excited and get distracted. Oh, mine. I'm just kidding. My excuse. Before I forget, next week and is the fasting retreat or Nyungne practice of Arya Avalokiteshvara. So many of you are very seasoned practitioners of Nyungne, I know, and many of you probably don't know what am I talking about. Don't worry, because next Friday evening at 7:30, Geshe-la will explain what the fasting retreat is all about, right, to the new students. Okay, of course, I will be driving here to translate for that. And then Saturday and Sunday are the real things, as we would say. It all starts at 5 in the morning and may go till 5 in the afternoon. Okay? And so you will have a couple of sessions every day. And then Monday morning, like you will meet one more time for a very short session, and then you will be relieved of your commitments, the vows, of the nyungne, and then you can enjoy, great breakfast. I mean great means because it could be simple breakfast. You might enjoy it a lot because you have been fasting, right? So that could be really the best breakfast you will ever enjoy. My footnote there. Okay. So that's how it works. Then you can go to work, go to school, whatever, we need to do. Okay, so no teaching next Sunday because people will probably not speaking, not eating, not do so. No teaching. And I believe no meditation next Sunday morning either. So it's all nothing but nyungne practice, okay, fasting retreat. Am I missing anything? That's it, right? Yeah. The talk is on Saturday, is it? Yeah. So, you can negotiate. Probably you want to finish the talk at the end of your nyungne and go home, right? You don't want to hang out another 2 hours, come back, do so. I don't know. I'm just simply giving a suggestion, right? Because I will be caught up in worldly activities, won't be here anyway. So. Right. Nyungne will be done by talk, right? So I guess, if you can tell people who's come for the talk, not the nyungne, maybe you can finish off, right? At the end of the nyungne, do the talk. And go home. I think, wouldn't that work better? Rather than kind of be in the parto for another couple of hours, right? So, again, the sapemba dalaya choke dung is a new issue that I'm choke tuition a yagrua. Yeah, Google's and just me. Yeah, Gisela thinks that's a good idea, what I just said. So at 5, do choke and you can't enjoy the choke, but anyway. So. Do talk and bring talk home. There you go. Okay, Rasta. Dime.
O peerless Savior and Supreme Teacher, Suddhodana's son, O the 17 masters and adepts, Nagarjuna and Asanga, and so on, O Dipamkara, as well as Sovereign Father Tsongkhapa, gloriously appear here today to grant auspiciousness. On the great path leading to the heart of enlightenment, you've traversed by means of the perfect threefold discipline, and have enhanced ever higher the realizations of the enlightened qualities. O glorious Guru, we offer our supplications at your feet. Pray the teachings of Lobsang, by tying well the sash of monastic disciplinary precepts and generating the altruistic intention to free all beings, engage in the tantric yogas of the two stages, think of the unbearable pain of the sentient beings who are enveloped in the forces of five degenerations, and to open wide the lotus grove of the Buddhist teachings, may your reincarnation appear soon as a source of merit for us. O infinite Buddhas and Bodhisattvas, you are the embodiment of uncontaminated and immutable great bliss. Kindly pour on us now your blessings, rains of nectar from the great clouds of your pervasive, pure, and bright wisdom and compassion to eliminate our distress. We pray to you, an incomparable great hero who has perfectly realized within his mind the threefold ethics, a pure essence of the extensive system of Tathagata's teaching, he who has raised a parasol of Dhamma in hundreds of directions. Your body is a sun of all wonderful qualities, but all of a sudden it's set into solitary peace. You have committed before infinite Buddhas to work for Dhamma and sentient beings. You could not have given up your commitment. However, your presence depends on the fortunes of disciples, for the power of dependent arising is inconceivable. Please reincarnate soon as a new light of Dharma out of your compassion that never abandons us. Please return soon as a supreme spiritual guide, a treasure house of the immense teaching of Buddha, a voice that eloquently elucidates the teaching that suits individuals' dispositions and capacities. Please return soon as a great Dharma king, who will be known in all directions for smashing into pieces a mountain of misguided teachings and views through the power of your thunderbolt lightning of the three reasonings. Please return soon, just like your previous self, an expert in the five major sciences of Buddhism, whose eloquent words and articulation of the teaching captivate the hearts of all the scholars and activate deep appreciation and pure enthusiastic minds. Please return soon as a spiritual guide, endowed with dedication in regard to the perfect view, meditation, and conduct, one who facilitates the opening of the blossom lotus that is the golden teaching of Tsongkhapa. By the power of the three infallible jewels, by the power of dependent arising of unchanging emptiness, by the truth of our pure thoughts and devotion, may all our aspirations be spontaneously fulfilled.
Nam mô vô song cú độ chí tôn bổn sư Tịnh Phạn Thái tử. Nam mô 17 cao tổ chư hiền thánh tăng long thọ vô trước. Nam mô Dipakara cùng tống cơ pha tôn vương tử phụ. Quang lâm đương chốn hiện tại hiện tiền ban truyền phước nhụ. Thênh thang đạo lộ trực chỉ chân tâm kiến tánh đẳng giác. Ngài đã siêu việt do nghiêm túc giữ ba tạng giới luật, rồi lại phát huy bay bổng tuyệt vời bồ đề hạnh chứng. Tôn sư quang vinh thứ chúng thỉnh cầu gó sen lễ lại. Xin mô trở lại quang huy truyền bá giáo pháp lưu sang, bằng sự thắt chặt đa giới nghiêm minh thiền môn tự viện, rồi lại khởi tâm từ bi đại nguyện giải thoát chúng sanh, tín chuyên hành trì du già mật định nhị phần chứng đắc. Xin luôn thương tưởng thống khổ bất kham ba cõi hữu tình, thường bị bao phủ trao đảo khôn ngươi mãnh lực ngũ trược, đưa tay rộng mở bát rắc vườn sen giáo lý Phật Đà. Xin mau tái sanh nhanh chóng hiện hành phước nguồn chú chúng. Nam mô vô biên chư Phật chư Bồ Tát. Các ngài thể hiện bát ngát báu thân của chân đại lạc bất biến trăm ngần, xin trải từ tâm minh cần phù hộ, mưa thánh thủy từ mây đại độ, đủ hệ bi tịnh phổ rạng ngời, tận diệt thống khổ tức thời, niệm danh ngài bậc đại hùng vô sánh, đã hoàn toàn chứng pháp tánh nơi tâm, ba tạng giới luật cốt thủy uyên thâm của đại thừa Như Lai truyền giáo, ngài nâng cao lộng vòng pháp bảo, châm hướng vươn lan tỏa muôn phương, báu thân ngài chối nhòa phẩm hạnh, sao bỗng nhiên nhập cảnh bích chi, ngài từng trước Phật thể nghi, hứa luôn hoằng pháp làm vì độ sanh, ngay này hẳn không đành bỏ nguyện, tùy phước đệ tử mà ngài hiện thế, lý nhân duyên chẳng thể nghĩ bàn, xin mau hóa sanh thành ánh đạo vàng, từ bi mãi chẳng bỏ đàn bơ vơ, xin mau trở lại là đại đạo sư, như kho tàng chứa kinh thư vô lượng, lời tuyên giảng soi đường pháp bảo, kế căn cơ thiện xảo độ sanh, xin mau trở lại là đại pháp vương, lừng danh kim cổ mười phương tán đồng, phá tan núi mị pháp lồng tà kiến, tam đoạn luật xét nghiến sấm vang, xin mau trở lại như thân đời trước, đắc ngũ minh kiến thức uyên thâm, biện tài vô ngại lý giải pháp âm, học giả khẩu phục hằng tâm, thiện giả cả cảm nhận hồng ân nức lòng. Xin mau trở lại là bậc đạo sư, thiên thư thông thái mẫn từ tận tâm, chánh kiến định mạng chuyên cần, sen hé nhụy hương lân pháp đàn, của tông khách ba ý ngọc lời vàng, do thần lực tam bảo liên ứng, do thần lực duyên khởi tương ưng, với tánh không bất nhị bất trùng, do tâm lực trí thành cùng kính ngưỡng, xin cho sở nguyện chúng đệ tử được tức thời viên mãn.
Then you're